This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Gareth Coker, and it's just so great to have a chance to chat with you again so soon.
Yes, you can't get rid of me at the moment. It's like this long period of time where I've had like release after release after release. Even though I've been working on some of these projects for a while, it's just kind of worked out that sometimes things get grouped closely together.
Yeah, well, I think this visit might make you our returning champion. So I just...
Oh, wow.
But it's really going to be fun to talk with you about the soundtrack for Ark Genesis 2. And you've been with this project now for so very long, through the original game and then the five DLCs. And when you signed on to this, did you have any idea what a long-term project it was going to be?
I mean, when I signed on to it, it was an early access game. And from a technically an indie developer, I had no idea it was going to morph into anything at all. They only needed a handful of tracks for the very first version of the game, and I think it was just like 20 minutes of music, if that. And obviously the early access was very, very, very successful. And so the game grew and developed, and they had more biomes inserted into the game, and then they had a story element at the end of the first game. And so from, you know, an initial 20-minute music arc, it turned into about, you know, 90 minutes for the first game. But I never saw it coming. I don't think even Studio Wildcard in their wildest dreams could have foreseen what would have happened with the success of the game. But I think there's two things. I think they caught lightning in a bottle, for sure, with what you can do in the game. First of all, I think everyone loves dinosaurs. But then it's like, well, you can not only play with dinosaurs, you can tame them and ride them and add all kinds of cool stuff to them. But then you've got the building element of the game, which is very, very extensive. If you go onto YouTube and look at some of the creations that have been made in the Ark universe, it's absolutely wild. So you can go through the entire game and just ignore everything that's going on and just have fun building stuff in that very unique setting. Or you can train an army of dinosaurs. Or you can train an army of dodos and see how they get on against a T-Rex. There's really no limit to what you can do. And that's both in single player, but where the real magic is the multiplayer aspect of the game, because it's a lot quicker building things when you've got maybe a friend who specializes in, I don't know, hunting dinosaurs or fishing or mining a certain kind of rock. And so when you have a bunch of people working together, you can create these very elaborate bases and tribes. And there's a reason why so many people have put thousands of hours into the game. It's the community aspect and the fact that it's one of the biggest sandbox games, I think, ever, because there's just so much to do. And I think the testament to the game's longevity is the fact that it's still, generally speaking, in the top 10 games on being played on Steam in terms of number of hours. And I think it's either number one or number two game when you consider that you have to pay for it. Most of the games ranked higher than it are free. So they must be doing something right. And yeah, I could never have foreseen. I just thought, I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. It's just 20 minutes of music and then it'll be gone. You know, not only did it turn into a full soundtrack, we got to record the original soundtrack at Abbey Road and a couple of the expansion packs. And then, you know, recently in the last year and a half in particular, they've really accelerated things on the story side and the lore of the game, which was not very well developed when I first worked on it, because they didn't know. They were just building a sandbox game. But now the lore of the game, and this is something that is very interesting to me, because Ark has an incredible story, but to experience it in game does require a lot of effort on the player's side. So they've been looking to make the expansion packs a little bit more story focused, and you get to know some of the characters. And of course, you know, we're going to talk about this too, the upcoming TV series is probably going to make the story a bit more digestible for players who maybe can't put in 1,000 hours to experience the whole game. So yeah, now it's just turned into this grand, I mean, first of all, as you've mentioned, a game and 5 expansion packs, and then a sequel on the way, and a TV series as well. And it's just turned into this giant the Ark universe has ballooned into something that I never could have possibly imagined, and it's allowed me to cover so many different genres of music as well.
Yeah, you know, I don't know of too many other composers who have been with a franchise this long. I mean, the team working on Destiny, for sure, and the composers that have been working on WoW for all of those years. But I'm wondering what that span of time, what kind of sense of perspective that's given you for how you can evolve the music.
Well, I think one of the things that helps is that each expansion pack is themed very, very differently. The first one I worked on was Scorched Earth, which was clearly like desert themed, and it's what it's called, Scorched Earth. Everything's very hot sounding. There wasn't a huge amount of music needed for that. And the next one was Aberration, which was the first time we made a soundtrack that was a bit more synth focused. And then Extinction ended up being kind of like a hybrid of everything. Genesis 1 also retains the synth element, but it's kind of put more into the background and it's more orchestral led. And then Genesis 2, they really were like, we want this to be very heavily synth based, but you can do orchestra as well because we have some really big epic moments, especially on the character side of things. So in terms of like the perspective, I guess, because I've been working on it such a long time, and because the early access version of the game was so bare bones in comparison, it meant that I hadn't exhausted the ideas when I first started on the game. It's not like, hey, we need 4 hours of music for the initial release. We've never had that kind of situation. So it's actually been taking those initial building blocks and kind of expanding on them in a smart and intelligent way. And, you know, the most obvious example of that is each iteration of the main theme.
Yeah.
I'm still using it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Good thing you started with a really good one, huh?
Well, it's funny. The main theme for Ark is literally the very first piece of music I ever wrote for the game. It was actually my pitch for the game. They were like, yeah, the pitch for the game was basically they gave me the initial trailer and were like, write some music for this. And I was like, okay, well, that's a pretty fun pitch because it's cool dinosaurs and epic stuff is happening. I didn't spend any time focusing on matching the action in the video. I was just like, I need to write a piece of music that encapsulates the sense of adventure that this is capturing, because that is what it is. For every player that got into Ark, it's like, oh my goodness, this is an adventure and I can do cool stuff with dinosaurs. That's really the only feeling I was trying to capture. So there is a sense of fun and adventure to the original theme. But because it's so deeply melodic, the melody is very strident, it gives a huge amount of flexibility in terms of how it can be rearranged. Ultimately, you only have to look throughout history and all of the strongest melodies, you can play them for full orchestra or a string quartet, they'll still be recognizable as a strong melody. So when you have a melody that's strong enough to be arranged in different styles, you've kind of caught onto something that's going to work for a long time. We've kind of gone all the way to the other end of the spectrum. The original version of the main theme is orchestra only. There's no synth in the original. And then Arc Genesis 2 is pretty much all synth. There is orchestra layered into it. It's funny because we went to all the expense of recording a live orchestra, but it's actually still quite far back in the mix. It's very blended. It's not just like we have some synths and then just smash to the orchestra on top. I spent a lot of time on Arc Genesis 2 figuring out the blend to try and create a unique sound. So it's not really synth and it's not really orchestral. It's kind of like the sci-fi orchestra, if that makes sense.
Yeah, actually, that's a great description of it, because the more I've listened to it, the harder it is to sort of separate those layers of what the orchestra recorded and then what synth choices you made to blend them. And is there a particular synth sound or synth pack that you used that you found was like really the best fit?
So that was the thing that took me the longest, like finding out how to mix and match, because every synth is built slightly differently. There's a company called Synapse Audio who make software emulations of older hardware synths. And so a lot of the synths that I'm using were more prominent in the 70s and 80s, but they're too monstrous to like have in a studio. And I'm going to upset a few people here, because I'm not one of the people who believes that hardware synths sound better. I think the technology is there now that for 99.9% of people listening, they're not going to be able to tell the difference between hardware and a software synth. But this company, Synapse Audio, I bought all of their products, and because I was so impressed with just how rich the sound was. I think that's a big characteristic of the synths that I've used in Arc Genesis 2, is that they're very rich and quite heavy sounding, and they're not apologetic, and they kind of have a unique signature. But the orchestral side of Arc's music is also very rich, and I was like, okay, it's like having a whole cream versus, you know, semi skimmed. I wanted to make sure that we're getting the whole cream version of the synth. And then it's really just about experimenting, like finding out how to layer the sounds correctly. And, you know, if you've got, for example, if you're putting heavy synth in the bass, there's not much point in having the strings do anything down there. So what I tend to do is like layer it like a big cake. If you have the synth as the bass, well, then you might want to put orchestra in the middle and then put synth on the top. So you've kind of got like a synth orchestra sandwich. That's the most simple way I can describe it, because then you don't have things competing in the same area. However, some magic can happen when you do try and like have synth and orchestral sounds doing the same thing at the same time. And generally I do that quite a lot with the shorter sounds. The absolute best example from the soundtrack, in my opinion, of that is Rockwell's Garden 1, which features, as someone else on YouTube quoted, Vivaldi-esque strings, which is a deliberate choice, because Rockwell is a Victorian character. And so I wanted to like hark back to music, not exactly from Vivaldi, but I wanted it to sound classical, like clearly classical. But the game takes place on, the part of the game takes place on a spaceship. So it's like, and Rockwell's a scientist, and he's, you know, been doing all kinds of crazy experiments that have turned out not so good for him. And I was like, okay, well, we need to capture the best of both worlds. So we've got these, you know, pulsing synths in Rockwell's garden that are combined with the very fast moving strings. And that was one of the first tracks I finished. And I was like, that is the sound of Arc Genesis 2, which generally it's featuring Rockwell's character pretty heavily. once you find the thing that clearly works, then you're just like, okay, how can I expand on this? So Rockwell, if we use Rockwell's garden as the template, then the Eden biome is definitely more organic, but the Rockwell's proliferation, which is basically the super corrupted part of the spaceship, that is, there's no orchestra in that whatsoever. It's all synth. But it's all derived from the original synths that are used in like the Rockwell's garden segments. So yeah, it's about like finding that platform to build off and then expanding upon it. But it was not an easy process, like finding out like which synths to use, because they're all built slightly differently. They all have unique sonic characteristics and there's thousands of them out there. So I had to do a ton of research. But yeah, all of the ones that were offered by Synapse Audio, there's one called Obsession and one called, that's just simply called The Legend, because it's based on a very old but famous synth. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but the sound was just so rich and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna fiddle around with these until I find something that's very, very satisfying to hear. And in the Rockwell's proliferation tracks, I think especially in the low end, the bass, the heaviness is really felt, and it doesn't sound so like you, I think for most people they'd never be able to guess that it was software versus hardware. I think the other thing about this DLC, I think it's pretty clear to anyone who's listening to it that I had a lot of fun working on it, because it's like they gave me a completely blank canvas. The only temp that was ever mentioned, and it's just because it's one of his favorite scores of all time, Jeremy, the creative director of Ark, he was like, I really like the Tron Legacy soundtrack. Just because it also does the fusion of hybrid of synth sounds and orchestra, but the synths in Tron Legacy are very different to what I used in Ark, and so and the orchestral writing is quite different too. But they did Joe Trapanese and Daft Punk did a beautiful job of like mixing the sounds. So they felt like one thing. There's a lot of the hybrid scores these days tend to have that synth core, and then they just slap the orchestra on top of it. And it kind of works, but it's not really thought out. The Tron Legacy soundtrack definitely is thought out in terms of like how the synths are working with the orchestra so they complement each other rather than just be two things ham-fisted together. And I think that's what Jeremy liked about it, rather than like any of the actual music itself. Like he wasn't like, you know, oh, this track, I love this track, you know, use it as temp. He was more like, it's more like the spirit of what it captures, like the and that beautiful blend that it has. So that's what I really focused on when putting together the soundtrack. And yeah, the Rockwell's Gardens tracks are the most well blended. And then everything stemmed out from that.
Yeah, I love the really just classically sci-fi sound for some of those. And I have an amazing sound system in my car, and just driving around listening to that and then like looking up at these massive clouds that we've had for the last few days. It's like such a perfect fit, even in the real world and not in these biomes. And
so. This is a good soundtrack for working out your sound system for sure. Cause it really, it doesn't hold back, and like the synth stuff is very heavy, but then the orchestral stuff is very light, because probably for the first time ever in Ark, we actually have, you know, more emotional content, especially towards the end of the game. The final two cues, Rockwell Postlude and Journey's End. It's like, okay, we really get to, you know, actually do some storytelling. And Journey's End, if you'll indulge me, it's, you know, it's called that for a reason, because it is the end of Arc 1, which for the players who have spent thousands of hours, this piece just plays during the credits, but there, I was like, I remember talking to Jeremy, I was like, what are we going to do for the credits? You know, do we just want to replay the main theme again, like, which is really, really loud, but the end of the game is definitely not really, really loud. And he's like, no, we need to write something that puts ARK players in a space to reflect on everything that has happened in the game since for some of them, 2015. So there's a lot of people have been playing this since the beginning. And so we wanted a piece of music that's like, yeah, this is going to take you back and make you not just think about the game, but think about the times that you've spent with your friends in the game. And because of what is the information that is delivered in the story, it's actually going to make you think contextually about what your friends actually are in the game. I don't want to give too much away, because it may eventually tie into the TV show, or people might not have played it yet. But finding out what you find out in Ark Genesis 2 kind of changes your perception of just about, you know, everything that the game was beforehand. And I never... ever, it was funny, you asked me, like, had you ever imagined what Ark would have become? I never thought in a million years that we'd get to the point where we're making people cry at the end of an Ark game. because I think people just look at Ark and think, oh, it's the dinosaur game. And I totally understand that. But for the people who have been with it for a long time, and this is what I've kind of been hinting at, is like the story element is now so strong and so exciting. And I really just can't wait for more people to like actually experience it, especially through the TV show. That actually, yes, it will elicit an emotional response because of how the story plays out. Thank you. I don't want to spoil things for listeners because it the first time I read the Ark story, I was like, and it was actually fleshed out. I was like, oh, wow, that is like, that's totally out there, but it actually makes sense. And yeah, I'm just very excited for it for people to experience it in the future. For those who haven't gone through and played the game for the last 6 to 7 years, they can now get it in a more digestible format next year sometime when the first season of the show comes out.
Well, since you've been living with this world and the story and the characters for so long now, was there a kind of a bittersweet aspect for you writing this music too, knowing that this chapter was wrapping up?
Well, so it's funny you mention that because there's yes and no. I think because of the amount of music I've done for Ark, it's like, wow, the Ark 1 chapter is coming to an end. But because I know that Ark 2 is coming and I know what's coming down the pipeline because I'm very, you know, they basically want me to write music for everything Ark for as long as possible, as long as the game keeps being successful. And I was working on the first two episodes of the TV show the same time as doing Ark Genesis Part 2. And obviously I can't say what I've done for the TV show, but all I will say is that even though it was the end of Genesis 2, because I was working on the TV show at the same time, it was like I truly realized the potential of what can be done with the music, because I could go back to the original music for Ark 1 and be like, oh wait, we can use the themes done for the original version of the game. And also, like, look at how they've developed for a character like Rockwell, who is going to be in the show. And the cross, like, I don't want to say contamination, but the convergence, that's the word I'm looking for. The convergence between the game and the TV show is so unbelievably exciting as a composer to work on. It's like, well, yeah, it's a bittersweet, but now I kind of get to do it all again in a linear format.
Oh, wow, like, yeah.
So I'm getting to revisit themes, and I'm glad I archive well, because some of this stuff was written in 2015. It's like, oh my goodness, is the project still going to even open? But it's so exciting to be able to bring them back, and it's like, well, now it's not going to be a looping track in-game. It's going to be a track with a clear start and a finish, and it's got to match exactly what's happening on screen because it's animation. It's a linear format. I think the other benefit about it being an animation is that it gives us flexibility on how to, you know, what we can show visually, because you can imagine this would be a very expensive thing to produce live action. But with animation, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's a drawing or painting, and there's no limit to what you can do. So I think considering the, you know, the how epic the world is and like just the craziness of everything that's going on, it gives us huge scope and flexibility for what we want to do with it. But ultimately, and this is what made me truly believe in the animated series, is it is a character-driven story set in the world of Ark rather than just more dinosaurs. Because you can't do that over a full season. Like, you know, that I was surprised at like how much character and heart the opening episodes have. And so it's like we've been able to take the strongest elements from Ark, you know, from Ark, both from the lore and the setting and the world and the music, and you know, we're now getting to package it into a format that so many people will be able to enjoy and not have to commit so much time to. So, you know, was it bittersweet? Yes, but I know what's coming. So it's both like, you know, it's the end, but like a new thing is starting almost immediately. Yeah, I can't really say if it's bittersweet or not, because it's because I know what's coming down the pipeline. And so it's definitely, while it's the end of a chapter for Ark 1, I think we're jumping right into the next chapter already. So there's no time to be sad, basically.
Oh, yeah.
because it's so exciting for everything that's coming.
Yeah, it's the story is so interesting, and it really has, as you say, just grown and grown and grown for over all of the expansions. And in Genesis 2, Rockwell has really kind of like assimilated himself into the ship. He's everywhere, and one of the obvious ways they show that is with all of the eyes that are like watching you from everywhere. And so what are some of the, you know, the characteristics of the you know, the different biomes, like Eden? You mentioned Rockwell's Garden too is sort of a kind of an intermediary place between Eden and then Rockwell's proliferation. But like with Eden specifically, what were some of the qualities of that biome that you wanted to, I don't know, reinforce with the music?
Well, I think it goes back to Rockwell's origins, really. You know, initially Rockwell was just a curious scientist, and as you progress throughout the game in Rockwell's, and this is going right back to the early expansion packs, you first meet Rockwell as an antagonist in Aberration, and Genesis 2 is really just kind of supposed to represent the full scale from like the innocent beginnings, you know, I'm a curious scientist, to I'm a scientist that got drunk on the potential possibilities of what can occur in the inside the Ark. And much as I'd like to try and tell the story to people listening to this, I will inevitably get bogged down. But the Ark wiki is so detailed and will do an infinitely better job because it's been put together by the community than I possibly could. I'd need to rehearse it like 100 times before I could like get it down into a 3-minute elevator pitch of the Ark story. Yeah, the Eden tracks in particular, they are the least tense. Nowhere in Ark is safe, but like it Eden is the safest area in Genesis 2. And then, you know, so there is an element of safety there, and it's like the least weird experiments are taking place. Then yeah, like Rockwell's proliferation, you've mentioned the eyes, but there's also a sequence like where literally the walls are speaking to you as well. Like there's faces embedded in the wall, like multiple faces. You can actually see it in the launch trailer for Ark Genesis 2, which is one of the wildest trailers I've ever
yeah.
seen. It was really just trying to capture the whole range of Rockwell's personality through music, like I said, from his innocent origins, you know, to the dark turn that he's taken. But like the ending of the game, without wishing to spoil too much, I mean, it's pretty obvious that, I mean, there's a track on the soundtrack that's literally called The Fight with Rockwell or whatever it's called. Rockwell's Battle Suite. Yes. Yeah, so you obviously know you're going to be fighting Rockwell, but the ending of the game, even though Rockwell's kind of beastly, the way it plays out, it also harkens back to Rockwell's origins right at the end game as well. And you're reminded that he's actually a very weak and frail and maybe innocent individual. So you're kind of getting that character flip within the space of like a couple of minutes with how the end game plays out. And yeah, this was really the first expansion pack where we were more heavily focused on a character and storytelling. And it's something that the people at Studio Wildcard have been focusing on in the last year and a half. We kind of got a hint of it with the Ark 2 trailer at the Game Awards last year, which, by the way, is in-engine. It's not pre-rendered. That is what the game is going to look like. I know people still can't believe it, but that is what it's going to look like. And yeah, they've been moving towards a better storytelling aspect, because I think they've just realized that they're actually pretty good at it. I think they just didn't have the confidence at first, because they remember they're a new developer, that, you know, Ark's the first game that the studio has made.
Wow.
pretty good start.
Yeah.
I believe it has crossed like 50 million sales. And the games had revenues of $1 billion now, which is just like that. I think that's public information. So, it's again, like I said, no one could have seen it coming. But with that, I think the studio's gained confidence over the years. So like, hey, we're actually pretty good at storytelling, and we have an amazing story to tell. So let's do a better job of getting that out to the players. And I think that's why Jeremy, the creator of Ark, wanted to do the series, because he's like, I want the story to be told that in a way that more people can get to it, because he thinks it's a really strong story. And yeah, because of all of the wild settings, there's so much more that we can do with Ark in general, rather than it just being the dinosaur game. That said, the dinosaurs is a great hook to get people interested in the game, and I think that's what got people excited. But even if you look at the initial trailer for the game that came out in 2015, the sci-fi element is there. There are these huge obelisks, but everyone's like, oh, there was never. I just like the primal elements of the game. I just want to, you know, fool around with my dinosaurs. It's like, well, the sci-fi element was there from the very beginning, and so a lot of this stuff has been planned. I never thought they would be entering, you know, to the point where you got a suit that means you can basically fly around the entire biome. So the fact that we went from, you know, dinosaurs to, you know, a big sci-fi adventure was quite surprising. But for Ark 2, it's going to be, at least from what I can say right now, it's going to be, you know, starting on the more primal level. And of course, with Vin Diesel being a heavily featured character, at least in the trailer, and he does make an appearance at the end of Ark Genesis 2 as well. That's the other thing that's kind of wild, is like now all of the characters in the game are fully voice acted, and the characters from the TV show have come in and also not just worked on the TV show, but also gone and redone the dialogue that was initially in the game, even from like the older versions of the game. But David Tennant, for example, was initially, you know, just going to be in the TV show, and they were like, well, you're perfect for Rockwell, so why don't you go in and do the game as well? So there's this beautiful convergence of the game and the TV show, and it's very, very consistent. And I'm very fortunate that I get to play a part in all of this, because it's not actually that common that the game composer gets to work on the TV show or the film. It's one thing that drives me nuts, actually. But I have no hesitation in saying this. There's no composer on the planet who could possibly know as much about Ark as I have done, or is as familiar with all of the themes, because I've been part of it for this long. At least for, you know, getting the TV show off the ground, and I'm able to like make sure that everything is connected. And it's not just me, like the visual team is wanting to make sure that everything's consistent, and the story team is wanting to make sure that everything's consistent. And so for fans of the game who will come across to the TV show, they'll be really happy that we've, you know, stayed faithful to what the game is. But for fans of the TV show, they'll be getting something that has a really clear identity. If nothing else, Ark does have a very clear identity on what it actually is. Because while there are a lot of dinosaur games out there, I don't think there's one that's like Ark, for example. And musically, I would say the same as well. You know, one of the best gifts they gave me was like, we don't need you to be like John Williams in Jurassic Park. Because ultimately, even if I could do that, but it's still going to sound like second-rate John Williams. You know, I can study John Williams for as long as I possibly can, but it's still never going to be quite the same as Jurassic Park. So they were just like, we want something that sounds like Ark. And, you know, so that, you know, the Jurassic Park theme is very upbeat, if you actually think about it. It's incredibly happy, and it does have that sense of adventure. Ark has a little bit more of a tribal danger to it, but it's still adventurous. Ultimately, the original main theme in particular is quite uplifting, but not in the same joyous way that Jurassic Park is. So not having to worry about emulating Jurassic Park meant we ended up kind of forging our own identity for Ark. And, you know, that main theme has been through so many iterations, and people kind of got to hear it one more time in Ark Genesis 2, play it out in a, you know, I never thought we'd be putting a kind of rock drum kit under the main theme as well. But I was like, hey, if we're going to go out, let's do it in style, and kind of give the audience something that's really enjoyable to listen to outside of the game as well. Sorry, I'm not sure if I even answered your question there, but kind of got carried away a little
that's
bit.
That's okay, because this is absolutely fascinating. And what it really points out to me is it seems like developers of game franchises who want to make them into a series or a film, at least in this case, they're treating the game as a much more sophisticated way of storytelling than a lot of earlier adaptations from games to film. I'm thinking, oh, there was a Prince of Persia one that was just kind of goofy. But this seems like it really is keeping the integrity of the Ark story and the characters intact.
Well, I think one of the key things about that is the creative directors of the games are also show running the TV show, which is very unprecedented. But that's one benefit that you have when your game has been successful and you don't you don't need to give up all the rights to have a TV show made. Because of that, it means that Jeremy and Jesse, the two co-founders of Ark, are kind of all over the TV show to make sure that it stays on brand and it stays consistent. So that's something that really helps with the creative convergence between the game and the TV show. Because if, for example, a TV company was just contracted, oh, hey, we just need you to make a TV show, go ahead and do it. Will they do the necessary research? Like, will they have all of that knowledge? I think Jeremy told me that they basically spent a week with the writers nonstop going over every aspect of the game, because they did hire proper script writers, because Jeremy and Jesse have, they have no experience with that. But Jeremy and Jesse do have the whole knowledge of the Ark story and the lore inside their heads, because they've been working on it for, the best part of a decade. So they were able to relay that to the writing team. So the writing team basically got the Ark educational crash course from the two people who created the game, and probably some of the in-game writers as well, and that helped them make sure that what they were writing in the TV show has that synergy with what's happening in the game. So, and I really like that. It's I have to admit, when they first told me about the TV show, I'm like, nah. That sounds like a pipe dream. And then they told me the cast for the TV show, which is absolutely insane, and I'm like, nah, that really sounds like a pipe dream. And then here I am in November 2020, and I'm scoring the trailer for the Ark TV show, and there's Russell Crowe's narration. I'm like, wait, what where has this come from?
Wow,
the cast list is insane. And then I was like, okay, well, this is very much real. And I think the fact that they we're able to get such a illustrious cast is testament to the work that's been done and the detail on it, because, it's yes, money talks for everyone, but to even secure a cast that good, and having heard the performances myself, they are ultra committed. You only have to go and hear David Tennant in Ark Genesis 2, and he's utterly committed to the role of Rockwell. So they're committed performances, and the story is sound. So, and the animation's really high quality. And so when I get that to work with, it's like, hey, I just really have to not screw this up with the music, because and just make sure that we retain the identity of the game, the game's music, and make sure that translates over to the TV show. But yeah, they are taking it really, really seriously. And that's going to pay dividends down the line. I can say with a high degree of confidence that just based on the first two episodes, I think people are going to be very, very surprised about what we deliver. I wish I could say more, but I can't.
That's okay. We'll just have to wait.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I can say, and this is already done for the trailer, is that it's very cool to have a studio that supports live music, especially post-pandemic when orchestras are getting back on their feet, because the whole show is going to be recorded live in London, which is no joke. That's a whole logistical challenge for me to figure out, because that's a lot of music, obviously. But they've gotten ultra committed to making sure the production quality of the game soundtrack is as high as possible. And so we actually recorded the alongside Genesis Part Two, I also recorded the first couple of episodes of the TV show, just because we had a style guide. And like, this is what the final quality is going to sound like for the rest of the show. So it's inspiring for the whole team that's currently working on the TV show. It's just really cool to have that kind of support. And again, just another thing that I couldn't see coming. I mean, I've recorded so much live music with ARC with massive, ridiculous sized orchestras that, like, only from my wildest dreams. The brass section for the TV show, and actually Genesis too, because they were kind of the same ensemble, it's 24 players.
Wow.
Just for brass.
Yeah.
It's like a battalion of brass. And the question always comes up is like, did I truly need 24 brass for ARC Genesis? You know, could I have done it with 18? Well, yeah, I probably could have, but I was like, well, it sounds really good though. So, I mean, when the brass blows on the Genesis 2 soundtrack, I mean, you really, really feel it.
Oh, yeah.
That my favorite example is in Rockwell's Postlude, which is actually a pretty short track, but there's a moment in the track, and it's so obvious when it happens, where it's just like a massive brass chord enters and you really feel it, and they're all playing in like the strongest range of their instrument. And I was like, I could listen to that all day. And actually, I guess I did listen to it all day, because we had the recording for brass for a whole day.
Wow.
And I got to hear 24 of London's finest brass musicians. And the recording was COVID safe, because they're all spread out, and they have a limited amount of time that they can be in the room. And I did get to hear them in action. That was possibly one of the easiest days recording I've ever had, because it's just like, I think London brass players are the best in the world at what they do, especially for film score stuff. And I basically just said to them at the beginning of the brief, the beginning of the day's recording for ARC Genesis 2, I was like, well, there's a lot of you here, so you can guess that this is going to be a big sounding project. And I just said to them, dinosaurs in space. And they kind of got it immediately. I didn't want to, because I could have spent hours elaborating on the story, but I was like, dinosaurs in space, and then just listen to the music to figure out like what you need to do. But yeah, that was a tremendously fun day of recording. But given that we're using a similar lineup for the TV show, there's many more days to come with that massive brass section. So that's pretty exciting.
Oh, that's going to be so great. I was curious about how you were able to record an orchestra in the middle of the pandemic in London, and obviously it was a huge success. And it's been a real challenge for orchestras all over to try to have enough players come together. So did you do the sections separately then so that there would be enough space in the studio?
So the Musicians Union dictates that you actually cannot have strings and wind instruments in the same room at the same time while COVID's a thing, because obviously string players can wear masks and wind players obviously cannot. So it makes sense to have wind players together. But the thing is, actually a lot of soundtracks are recorded like that anyway. It all kind of depends on how much control you want in the final mix, which especially in games is quite important. But what I generally prefer to do is I like to have the whole orchestra in the room and we do some takes together where everyone's playing at the same time. And then if we need them, for example, if the brass is playing super loud in a recording, you're going to want to record them separately because you'd kind of need that control, because brass will overpower everything, you know, no matter what. But for this, it was kind of enforced. So the maximum number of players allowed in Abbey Road Studio 1 is 50, which is a very generous sized string section, yeah, which I took full advantage of. they're all spaced out though. The one thing that I think is most challenging for the players, if you think about how an orchestra is grouped during a concert, they're usually sat quite closely together so they can listen to each other and adjust to each other's tuning. But because they're a bit spaced a bit further out, they have to focus a little bit more on the tuning. Of course, with great players, it's no problem really. I think actually the biggest knock-on effect with that is the microphone setup, because when they're all spread out, it has very big implications on how the sound is picked up and how the sound travels around the room. And because they're spread out, it can end up being a little bit more ambient than you might have intended. But actually, the engineers at Abbey Road are geniuses. And to be frank, I mean, if you listen to Arc Genesis 2, it just sounds like a well-recorded orchestra. So now, in terms of like how I interface with the orchestra, it's pretty much like how you and me are talking right now, except the other end, instead of talking to you, I'm talking to Jake Jackson in the control room, and he has a button which pipes me through to the conductor as well. And amazingly, I have no idea how they manage this, but there's no latency either. And what I hear back, they plug in, there's another app called Audio Movers, and that's basically, it's no different to watching a Twitch stream, basically, but it delivers audio at really high quality. And I'm hearing on my headphones or on my speakers exactly what the engineer is hearing on the previous take. So honestly, it's the only difference is that I'm not physically there. And so that kind of like, you lose a bit of time because you kind of have to listen and you can't give almost instantaneous feedback to the conductor. But you're only losing like a handful of seconds. So as long as, you know, I definitely prefer being there, because also body language is a very real thing when you're interfacing with musicians. But all things considered, the setup now to record music could not be, I can't imagine it being any easier than it was for Arc Genesis 2. And considering how much music we recorded and considering how heavy it was, and, you know, the Rockwell's Garden track that I referenced, that's not an easy piece of music. Like, it's fast strings for like 80 seconds. And, but yeah, it was no different to, you know, how I'd normally function. I think the only difference this time is I've relied a bit more on the conductor because I'm not there. You know, I'm asking the conductor, what are you hearing? I'm asking Jake, what are you hearing? Is there anything that, you know, because they're my speakers are good, but they're listening on the Abbey Road speakers.
Oh, sure.
You know, and the Abbey Road gear. So, and the conductor's obviously in the room with the musicians, so they can really hear like everything that's going on. So, I just want to make sure that they're capturing everything. Fortunately, I mean, Jake Jackson has ridiculously amazing ears, and he's not just an engineer. He could produce albums if he wanted to and act as a music producer, and he kind of gets what I'm trying to do with the work. So, yeah. Obviously, I think the thing I'm most upset about is that I still haven't been in the same room as the 24 brass players. So that hasn't happened yet, but I know for sure that it is going to, because I just want to feel, the impact on the sound and feel the air moving, because that sounds like it would be pretty spectacular being in the same room as 24 brass players going at fortissimo. That I think that's my only regret about the COVID situation. But all things considered, and it's not just me, there's been plenty of projects recording in London in a similar way. It's good that the musicians union found a way to get the session orchestras working for film and TV and games.
Yeah, definitely. And keeping everybody safe and not having to worry about that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I made sure that we had, in the grand scheme of things, it didn't cost that much extra, but we had a medic on site to take everyone's test and temperature when they came into the building. They really thought of everything, to make the players as safe as possible. And it's clearly working because that recording methodology is still happening, probably even right now. I'm glad they were able to figure it out. And I think the first recording started happening in about August last year. So it's actually been going okay for a considerable length of time now, August or September last year. I think the hardest thing to do is choir, because they obviously project the most. So there's a limit on how many singers you can have in the room. We didn't record any choir for Arc Genesis, but and other projects that have recorded choir have been limited to 20 musicians in the spot, just because of how much the particles are projected. But also, I think if people are vaccinated now, I think, like everything, the musicians' unions around the world and the organizations are going to be monitoring and trying to change it on a weekly basis or a monthly basis to make things as accommodating as possible.
Well, it's just a monumental effort, but the result is just so, so incredible. And it's just been so fascinating to hear about not only the music for Genesis 2, but the little bit that you can tell us about the music for the series and for the TV series. And I'm just a little curious if there's anything you can say about the music for Arc 2, because you've released the main theme for that. Anything you can say without any spoilers?
So, yeah, I mean, I think the main thing is that we kind of went all out on the sci-fi direction for Arc Genesis 2, and that was tremendous fun to explore. But the main theme, there's almost no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, and it does have that kind of primal quality that you touched on earlier.
That was exactly the brief. Like, we are going back to full primal. If you look at the Arc 2 trailer and just look at what Vin Diesel and his tribe is wearing, I mean, we really are back to basics. Brief was, yes, it's heroic, but it's a more violent heroic than the traditional, like the adventure feel of the original theme. And also it was like, okay, it's time to retire the original theme for now. I think there'll always be a place for that original theme to, you know, maybe make a return, but going and establishing a new melody for Ark 2 was really one of the keys. Yeah, it's very different in feel because of the primal tone of the game, but I think that's going to pay off dividends down the line. And, you know, who knows, you know, maybe there's a piece in the future where we combine the Ark 2 theme and the Ark 1 theme, or the Ark 2 theme and Rockwell's theme. I don't even know, because we're quite a long way from starting that. But moving into Ark 2, it was, we wanted to make a clean break from Ark 1, make sure, you know, there is still a reference to the original Ark 1 theme, but it's a reference rather than a feature. We wanted to make sure that we established a new melody, and there'll be tons of new ways in which that one can be rearranged for, you know, for Ark 2 and however the story develops. But the focus will be on having a primal and very raw sound, and I think synth will be at a minimum for at least the initial release of Ark 2, because based on what I've seen and what's been shown publicly, it's not really looking like a synth heavy setting. So that's gonna be fun to explore, but that's another one. The Ark 2 theme will also have the massive brass sections. I just read today that Lorne Balfe used 118 musicians at Abbey Road pre-COVID for Black Widow, and I'm like, gonna see if I can break that record, maybe. Gonna get 119. There's literally no reason I can think of to have 119 musicians, but it seems excessive. Ark 1 was 93. I could definitely justify getting into triple figures. 100 would be pretty cool. You know, we're dealing with dinosaurs and we're dealing with this crazy epic setting. So, you know, I've always felt that if you're going to have an orchestra, it's got to be justified for the setting. Like, there's no point in just having an orchestra just because you can. That's a trap that a lot of games tend to fall into. It's like, we can hire an orchestra. It's like, well, did you really need one? you know, is it appropriate for the game? But for Ark, it absolutely is appropriate. And I think one of the best things that came out of Ark is the two founders, you know, I deliver good digital mock-ups, but Jeremy, I remember he said to me, is like, I'm never not recording live again. The difference is just too profound, especially when it's as well performed as it is. He really understood like what a difference like a live group can play, especially with the force that we are generating with the music. He was like, yeah, we're not doing that again. Very fortunate, obviously, that we have the resources to be able to record in London the size orchestras that we're doing, which is, you know, it's quite rare, but it's really cool to have that support from the person who's running the entire show. Mm-hmm. Obviously that all trickles down to being able to hire musicians and get them working after the pandemic, so it's good.
That's phenomenal. Well, I can't wait to hear what's next. And Gareth, it's been so much fun to just look under the hood for this last chapter of Ark Survival Evolved. And so thank you so much for taking some time to talk about it.
Thank you so much, Kate.